It's a question, you know, we've tossed around quite a bit here with no real black and white answer. It's starting to get a little more black and white when we really, really bury into it. Does the government have a compelling reason to force kids to wear masks in schools? To suspend our rights as guaranteed by the Constitution for a compelling interest? That's the gist of a question behind a lawsuit filed on behalf of a group of parents against three Missoula school districts. We're going to dig into that today with one of the lead plaintiffs, lead attorneys for the plaintiffs in that lawsuit, Quentin Roach. And then a bit later on to broadband infrastructure. Where is it going? Where are the towers going to be? We'll look at that today, too, on Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now here's your host, Tom Schultz.
Oh, yes, with feeling. With feeling good on a Tuesday. I hope you're feeling good. We're hanging in. I appreciate that. And thank you for hanging in there with us. 2 decades strong, working on three, from Montana for Montana. An objective perspective. And home for the newsmakers, Voices of Montana. Tom Schultz alongside. A lot of things to unpack here today. We've covered a lot of broadband issues, too. And so I'm just curious. And Jeff Feist is going to be with us here in a bit from the Montana Telecommunications Association to walk through where these towers are going to go. Towers, so to speak. That's probably not the only piece of infrastructure that we are going to be funding. But, you know, we've got these no-bar backcountry areas and no-bar rural areas, so to speak. How, when, where, and why are we expected to, you know, improve our broadband infrastructure with all the money that's being spent? So that's a bit later on. But first, let's welcome our guest, as I mentioned, to Quentin Roach. He is with us here. He is the one of the attorneys for the plaintiffs in a lawsuit challenging the authority and reasoning of these three public school districts that have forced mask mandates on students. He is with Roads, Seifert, and Erickson in Missoula, and joins us now to kind of unpack this. Good morning, Quentin. How you doing?
Good morning, Tom. I'm great. Thanks for having me on today.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate that. You guys just filed this lawsuit against three Missoula public school districts. From the reports I have, a handful of parents. You're going to be joined in by a group called Stand Up Montana. Let's launch into that. And then the gist of the question there, this compelling reason. I think there's a lot to unpack here when you brought a lawsuit that forces the government to show this compelling interest.
Well, it's our theory that if you force kids to wear what the Montana law defines as a medical device, a cloth mask, then you're interfering with the rights of their parents to make their medical decisions for them. And we think that clearly under Montana law invades the right of privacy that is ensconced in the Montana Declaration of Rights. And if the government is going to do that, whether it be a school district or state of Montana, a city, it has to show, based on well-established case law, both from Montana and from the federal jurisdictions, that it has what they call a compelling government interest in doing so. And the compelling government interest boils down to life or death decisions, or, as the courts say, the survival of the republic. So interests of the first magnitude that can be served in no other way. And, you know, the fighting off the pandemic is obviously a compelling government interest. I don't think anybody would quibble with that. On the other hand, does making students wear masks serve that interest in any way? There hasn't been much science to demonstrate that. In fact, I don't know of any science with respect to students wearing masks in schools. It's been actually the opposite. For example, the Centers for Disease Control published a study that they did last winter before the vaccines were available to see if masks in Georgia schools, they studied 90,000 students to see if masks in Georgia schools made any difference. They did find that requiring the teachers and the staff to wear masks made some statistical significance in lesser infection rates and lesser spread of COVID-19. But they also found that there was no statistically significant difference in schools that required students to mask and schools that made it optional. So that's the only real science on this that anybody's been able to point to, except for studies prior to COVID-19. I think, you know, the United States has been dealing with viral pandemics regularly since at least 1918, and they've been studied, and how to stop them, how to prevent the spread. It's been studied closely. And we know from that study that masking in general really doesn't make any difference. Viruses spread despite masking. And there's no evidence with respect to the specific infringement on students that masking does any better with them than it does in the general population. And this has been studied intensely, you know, in that 100 and some odd years since the 1918 flu epidemic, there have been great strides in knowledge and skill and technique and technology in the medical field. And yet we've come up with nothing to indicate that non-sterile masks in a non-sterile environment will prevent the spread of a virus like COVID. And so you've got these interests that are weighed against each other. First, you've got the interests of the individuals to make their own medical decisions versus the interest of the public in stopping the spread of COVID. The problem is you don't have a connection between those two. And so if the government can't come in and show, look, we've got to stop this virus and the masks help us do it, especially when you put them on kids, then it's violating people's rights. And the courts have put the burden on the government to show this. I don't have to go in there and prove it doesn't work, try to prove a negative. They have to point to science and prove that these measures are effective. There's some efficacy here. There are fewer people who are going to fall ill, fewer people who will die if we impose this requirement. And I just got the response yesterday from the school districts, and they don't point to any science. They don't have any scientists who executed affidavits. In fact, they candidly admit, they say, be assured that the school districts have relied upon significant epidemiological studies, data, and local and national health care recommendations. The schools require K through 12 coverings, and they will provide that information at the appropriate time. Well, Tom, this is the appropriate time, right? The time is now. If you're going to impose these restrictions on people, you're going to open the kimono and let us see what it is you're basing this on, and it better be science, because if it's not, you can't do it.
And this is why I really am curious about this lawsuit and moving forward. Quentin, will they measure the harm in this? If they determine there's a slight advantage, as you said, to wearing masks, it's minuscule, it really is. Do the courts also measure the potential harm? Are there studies on the harm that mask wearing, and does that come into play here?
Well, it does, in the sense that any kind of a medical decision that a parent makes, there's going to be costs and benefits. There's going to be risks, rewards. And the risks that children face from the masks are manifold. For example, many kids with acne have these masks aggravate them. And I have clients whose children have permanent scars from masking from last year because of the aggravated acne that they suffered. Same with MRSA. Kids with MRSA get aggravated by wearing masks. Kids with autism have a very difficult time with masks or flat won't wear them. Kids with asthma, same thing, and the list goes on. Furthermore, it's well accepted in the educational community that the wearing of masks, especially for younger kids, interferes with their ability to learn.
Yeah.
They've got to see their teachers' faces in order to learn to read. They've got to see their teachers' faces in order to learn to read body language and facial expression and learn how to interact with their teachers and their peers. I mean, that's just not a theory. It's just generally accepted. And it's recognized by, the profession that this is one of the drawbacks of requiring kids to mask, is it interferes with their ability to learn. It interferes with their ability to learn to socialize with their peers. And so there are lots and lots of costs. And what it boils down to is that the parents are in the best position, and the right of privacy recognizes that. The parents and individuals are in the best position to weigh the trade-offs of different sorts of medical care decisions and medical devices and medical judgments. And the state really has no role in that unless it can show with its own proof that there's a compelling government interest in doing so. And so it has to prove the efficacy of its measures that interfere with people's rights. And if it can't prove that, then it can't, it's unconstitutional. I didn't write the Constitution, and I didn't write the cases that so provide for this. This is the careful judgment of wise men and women who've considered this in a very careful way. And these are the rules that they've promulgated. And these are what we have to live with.
Quentin Rhodes with Rhodes, Seifert, and Erickson out of Missoula, lawyer for the plaintiffs in this lawsuit, challenging the authority, as I mentioned, of three Missoula public school districts, the authority and the reasoning of three Missoula public school districts, their mask mandate for all students. It's going on in other areas across Montana as well. I know Gallatin is one area where they've done this. And let me ask this question, Quentin. Can the courts throw out or disregard the science as easily as it seems that the mainstream misleadia has?
Well, I don't think they will. I mean, I think we'll get a fair and careful hearing by the courts. They take these constitutional rights seriously in Montana, courts do. And, you know, they have a strong tradition of that. And it goes back to the Constitutional Convention of 1972, where the delegates, the framers of the Montana Constitution, also were very careful about laying out the Declaration of Rights and making sure that the courts and the government treats these matters seriously. And they really do. The courts treat these matters as serious as any other that come before them.
And that I appreciate. The lawsuit, you already received a response from the school districts. So they're going to stand their ground, and eventually this will go to court anytime soon.
Well, we've asked for an expedited hearing.
Yeah.
There was the school districts disqualified Judge Deshaw. And they didn't. They have a peremptory right to disqualify a judge if they want to, and they chose to disqualify Judge Deshaw. So now we have Judge Marks. He just came into the case this week. We've asked for an expedited hearing. I'm sure he'll consider that carefully, and we should get a court date within the foreseeable future here.
Is there any precedence set?
And how do you mean, with respect to the expedited consideration?
Just this challenge of a compelling government interest.
Well, yes. And the courts have dealt with this in a couple of different areas in Montana. First, with respect to the rights of people in same-sex relationships. That goes back to the early 1990s. They've taken this up with respect to the rights of women to have early term abortions, and that's been dealt with in the 1999 was the Armstrong case, and then in 2015 or 2016 was the Weems case, and that's really where this jurisprudence arises with respect to privacy and the interference by the government in people's rights to make health choices and to be autonomous in their decision making about private matters. And so, yeah, we're not plowing any new ground here when it comes to the compelling government interest. This is all well established. It goes back to federal case law from the 1970s. And privacy is something that we recognize in Montana and hold it dear.
Yeah.
There's some good quotes from the courts with respect to this. I'll read you one here. In Montana.
Why don't you stand by, because we got a break, and I don't think you're going to get to the end of that. So we'll come back and hear that. Quentin Rhodes is with us here with Rhodes, Seifert, and Erickson as we're looking at this lawsuit brought by parents against three Missoula public school districts. And then we'll explore the Biden Education Department opening up civil rights investigations into five states for banning school mask mandates. More voices in a bit.
Hi. We're the Oak Ridge Boys.
Scammers steal billions of dollars from unsuspecting people every year.
We are working with AARP's Fraud Watch Network and the Department of Justice to keep you from being a victim of fraud.
They have vital information for you.
They will help you get in touch with folks that fight fraud every day.
Go to AARP.org/Fraud Watch Network.
Are parents' rights being usurped by the government, by local school boards that decide their kids, in a medical decision, need to wear masks in schools? Does the government have a compelling interest in in doing so. We're with Quentin Rhodes here today on Voices of Montana with Rhodes, Seifert, and Erickson. And Quentin is one of the lawyers for the plaintiffs in this lawsuit, as I mentioned. And that you know, they're law firm, they're trial lawyers. Quentin, I saw on your website here, formed in 2014 with a vision to provide expert consultation and first-class representation to clients mostly in jury trials. Do you think this comes down to a jury trial?
Well, you know, we won't get the right to a jury trial here on these constitutional issues, but we will with respect to judging the science. So the judges won't be the, you know, most likely the judges won't be the ones deciding what the science is. It'll be juries listening to experts and resolving that after a trial on the merits.
I think that's interesting. Let's talk about the precedents then. You were, before we had to go to break here, going to quote from a case.
Yes, the Montana Supreme Court has said on two occasions, quote, "In Montana, we jealously guard our broad right of privacy," unquote. And that's pulled from two different cases. And in when it comes to medical decisions, quote, "We hold the personal autonomy component of this right broadly guarantees each individual the right to make medical judgments affecting her or his bodily integrity and health, in partnership with a chosen healthcare provider, free from the interference of the government," unquote. So, you know, we're not plowing any new ground here. These cases are 20, 25 years old, and we've been living with the fact of our privacy. You know, the court has recognized the fact of our privacy for a long time, and I don't expect that it will change that view.
Boy, it's bumped into the Constitution all through this this pandemic in a lot of ways. Children have found to be safe from this COVID-19 virus. A study in the UK, there are other studies as well, but the survival rate of children, according to an article I'm reading from Dr. Thomas Siller with from American Thinker, 99.995% survival rate for COVID-19. Does that come into play here?
Well, we think it should. We think that the fact that children are not greatly at risk here should, but you know, there's also the interest of the teachers and the staff and the parents at home, grandparents at home.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not simply just focusing on the children, and I understand that, and people have genuine and concerns that should be addressed in that respect. But that's where it comes down to the efficacy of the mask. You've got a non-sterile environment, the school. You've got non-sterile masks. The kids, you know, they switch masks, they trade masks, they touch their masks, they wear them sometimes, they don't wear them sometimes. So you really have an environment that is not conducive to controlling the virus by use of these medical devices, that the masks just don't work. And if they did, you know, there'd be a different argument here. I don't think that this same argument, for example, applies to vaccines, because the science for vaccines is much different than the science for masks. But if you look at the science for masks on students in schools, it just doesn't support the idea that you're having any effect on whether there's the spread of COVID-19 or the mitigation of COVID-19. It's just not there.
Do you find this odd? The education department has opened up civil rights investigations into these states, these five Republican-led states that have limited mask requirements in schools. They've named them here as Iowa, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Utah. I don't know why Montana is not on that list. Maybe there's nuances there. Does your comment on that, does that play into this lawsuit at all?
Well, I don't think it plays into our lawsuit. Yeah. I think that, you know, those civil rights investigations are really politically motivated. It's coming from Washington, D.C. You know, Washington, D.C. is not a place that rests on a lot of principle. And, you know, they're trying to gore somebody to ox, it sounds to me like. And it's not unprecedented for the state or the Department of Justice to be goring people's oxes. And I wish they would stop. But, you know, it's not really based on the civil rights of anybody. It's just based on who can we target today in order to further our political position, which is, you know, as an attorney, I just I think that's a sad thing for the rule of law.
Yeah. The world's upside down. Are you guys looking at an injunction?
That's what we're seeking. We're asking the court to enjoin the schools from enforcing their student masking requirements. And to, you know, we're not, this doesn't touch, you know, doesn't speak to the teachers, doesn't speak to the staff, doesn't speak to adult visitors. It doesn't speak to the other requirements that they're imposing, such as social distancing and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's just kids, masks on kids, forcing kids to wear masks is the subject of the lawsuit, and we don't think the government can sustain the proof that they need to sustain in order to satisfy the strict scrutiny analysis that we're talking about
here. I think a lot of people believe that. The school board is pushing forward. Does this lawsuit go away if they give ground?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we tried to negotiate with the school board, and they would not even respond, let alone counteroffer. Mm. It was deafening silence. And so, you know, we had to push forward with the lawsuit because they wouldn't talk to us about it. And now they seem to have doubled down. And, you know, they're holding firm on this position that their students have to wear masks until further notice.
Well, that'll be great. You get to go to work on it then, don't you?
Well, you know, I enjoy my work. I do, Tom. I got my license to practice law in 1995, and I haven't worked a day since.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I can tell, too, we appreciate the stances I think you take. It's a lot of it, I believe, is kind of centered around the public good. So thank you for that, Corey.
Well, I appreciate it, Tom. Thank you for the kind words.
Yes, and I know you're a Grizz fan, so that football season's getting underway soon. A little bit of excitement going on there, too.
Yes, everyone is on Twitter over it.
Love it. Maybe I appreciate you coming on here, and I do want to follow this, and looking forward to the next update, Quentin.
Okay, my pleasure. Anytime, Tom.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Quentin Rhodes with Rhodes, Seifert, and Erickson. We'll stand by. It's Jeff Feiss is going to join us next as we'll talk more about broadband, where these towers are going to land, what about 5G, when do we have backcountry bars. That's ahead here after these headlines from Brian Bennett. Jeff Feiss is standing by, general manager with the Montana Telecommunications Association. We're going to launch into broadband and just kind of, you know, when, where, and how will the expected broadband infrastructure spending begin to make a difference in Montana? I want to take a quick call, though, from Casey. Casey, it's Great Falls, isn't it?
Yeah, Great Falls.
Yep, KQDI, 1450 AM. I know that Quentin no longer on with us, but you wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, I wanted to just I applaud them taking this issue on. And about the only way you can get at it is through a legal issue. So they're so brazen, they just do whatever they want to do. And the idea that I think is important to look at, a lot of this, the figures and the data has been thrown around to support masks, is basically empty and devoid of any real peer-reviewed true science. It's I call it pseudoscience. And one of the telltale signs of that is in the last year and a half that this virus has been exposed and going through the system here and around the world, is that there has not been any money spent on a true peer-reviewed effect of a mask and how it is affecting the people who wear them all the time, or, you know, especially the kids, and how the effects, the counter effects for the benefit is very limited, I believe. There has been a few studies, but nothing that has hit the major media and needs to be explored. And I think in a lawsuit is probably the only way you're going to get at it. If you get a decent judge.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and Quentin mentioned that too. He feels that the courts are going to respect the rule of science in this when it comes to balancing our rights versus public safety. So that was good to hear. Casey, I appreciate that. We're gonna move on, but we'll certainly follow this lawsuit through. It was interesting to hear that, as Quentin Rhodes had said, the school board doubled down on it, really wouldn't negotiate. And I think we get political about all of it. In fact, that's one of my laments, is that this has all just turned completely political, almost from the very beginning. When we were willing, and it was a gentleman yesterday who made a call, I think it was Al, also from Great Falls, who said that, you know, we were all willing at the very start of this to do what we needed to do because we didn't have a lot of information. You know, your comment about having good science regarding mask wearing, that could have existed already. But we don't have a ton of information really over this period of 2 years now regarding this virus to have definitive black and white answers. So, yes, it does remain then in the court of public opinion. It becomes a political hot potato just because of that. I like this case going forward because if we do get some science on it, some real science, I think we have better answers and better plans going forward. So Jeff Feist will join us next year as Voices of Montana continues in just a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today. So good to have you joining us today. I hope you're kicking it on your Tuesday. And now we move into broadband. You look at this digital divide in Montana. And I don't suppose there's ever going to be a day where every inch of Montana is covered by 3-4 bars. I don't know. Maybe that can happen. If you need that, there are other technologies available to you for that. But as we look at bridging this digital divide, Montana, we're either underserved or unserved areas, or there's even this definition called frontier area, which is extremely limited broadband service. Now, the legislature has attempted to look at this, more than just look at it. They put some money behind it. The federal government is putting some money behind it, the Montana legislature, I should reference, and then the federal government as well. And the question is then when, where, and how will this expected broadband infrastructure begin to make a difference in Montana? And got to answer that as much as possible. Jeff Feist is with us, general manager for the Montana Telecommunications Association, and they represent locally owned rural telecom broadband providers in Montana. Good morning, Jeff. How's it going?
Good morning, Tom. It's great.
Appreciate you being here. So there is money in the pot, and people have lined up. I guess I'm just speaking colloquially. Money in the pot. People have lined up to spend it. What's it looking like now? It's a lot of money, and is it clear sailing for improved broadband?
Well, there is a lot of money, and it's not enough on the one hand or on the other hand. So Montana's ranked toward the bottom, if not the bottom, of broadband accessibility in states around the nation. One study that's widely cited puts us about 51st. How do you get 51st out of 50 states? You add D.C. We've got a long way to go. You mentioned the digital divide. That's usually a measure between what's available in cities around the country, and the average download speed for cities around the country is 250 megabits per second, and then it goes from there. And the rural America usually has less access to high speed internet, which we call broadband. And then there's another divide called the rural divide. So you have the urban rural divide, where you have cities and rural communities with a gap between them in terms of broadband access. And then the rural divide is we have communities served by rural community-based locally owned companies that tend to be pretty good. And then there's rural communities that lack broadband accessibility. They tend to be served by large national companies that are out of state. And that shows. So there's two divides. The legislature this year, using money from the American Rescue Plan, allocated $275 million to broadband grants. That program is still getting set up. $275 million is a lot. It's matched by a 20% match by applicants who apply for grants under that money. So you add 20% to that. And then the law encourages local communities, such as counties and municipalities and even school districts, to throw in more money. So we're talking $350 million, close to $400 million available. And then Congress, as you've read, is working on an infrastructure bill, passed the Senate 69-30, I think it was, and pending in the House. Looks like that might pass, and that's going to throw another $42 billion at broadband across the country, $100 million to each state at a minimum. And then further allocation of money, depending on how what the poverty rate looks like in the states and how rural the state is, and so that's going to throw more money at Montana, and we're talking some serious money here. And then how do we implement it? How do we allocate it is the next question.
Yeah, let's go into that. And it is $500 million almost, and that's just for Montana, and that still pulls us up a little short, you think?
Yes. We estimate, and independently, separately, so does the Department of Commerce, the Montana Department of Commerce, estimate it's going to cost about $1 billion. And that's just a function of the cost of infrastructure, of deploying fixed, high-quality broadband service, such as fiber optic infrastructure, is expensive. And we are a big state, in case you didn't notice. So fourth largest state in the nation and the third least densely populated state in the nation. That means it's a whole lot of money to get service to not a lot of people, and that adds up real fast.
Where are the priority areas?
Well, good question. The law that passed and was enacted earlier this year by the legislature and signed by the Gov provide for frontier and unserved and then underserved areas. And that law says that priority should be given to frontier and unserved and underserved areas in that order. And so that's a tall order, and it sort of sets up this conflict between what priority should be for spending money on the unserved and frontier areas, and those are the most expensive to serve.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about, you know, in eastern Montana, we have fewer than one household per square mile, oftentimes fewer than half a household or a third of a household per square mile.
Thank God for that.
So, yeah, and that just costs a whole lot of money to take fiber or even to build a tower and shoot a wireless signal, dozens of miles to a single location.
Yeah, what does putting up a tower cost? I know it's going to vary in a lot of ways, but in general.
Depends on the tower, of course. But, you know, a going rate is $250,000 for your basic cell tower that you see hanging around the landscape.
So the when we talk the priority areas, frontier areas, unserved areas, that's all of Montana.
Yeah, it is. We are a rural state by definition. Even our big cities are considered pretty rural if you live in the east or west coast. And so here's the conflict. So you have a statutory priority to serve unserved and frontier areas. That costs a whole lot of money. We could spend $275 million like that and not serve a lot of people numerically. You know, we would reach digital equity or digital parity by serving unserved people with high-speed broadband. That's another issue we can talk about is what is high-speed broadband and what should we be doing? What should we be investing in for the future?
Yeah.
You have that conflict, you know, spending a whole lot of money on not serving a lot of people versus sort of the political interest is serving those people who are underserved, even in our biggest population centers. We have portions of some of our biggest population centers either just on the outskirts or even in town who are unserved or underserved. And so you could do a lot of bang for the buck by serving those more customers in more densely populated areas at a lower cost, and that would elevate us from 51st to, you know, somewhere in the middle of the pack or even better. So you have that conflict between do I want to serve more people or do I want to serve, you know, the frontier areas? And that's something that's going to have to get resolved.
Jeff Feist with us, General Manager of the Montana Telecommunications Association. Let's go into this then, high speed, because these are not all just towers. You're gonna bury some of this cable, I presume, but it's the wireless that we need, right?
Well, yes and no.
Yeah.
Right now we're talking about terrestrial fixed broadband communications. Okay. So we're excluding satellites right now from the statute. And so part of that is wireless. You can send fiber out as far as you can to the edges of your network and then do a wireless shot from there, a fixed wireless shot. But what we're really talking about is an opportunity here that we probably will never see again, and that is with the billions of dollars that, is being spent and funneled down to the states, which is a good idea, actually. I like the idea of sending money to the states rather than having the federal government tell us what to do. But we have an opportunity here once in a lifetime to do it once and do it right. So in the past, we've had these incremental steps to fund this and that. And every 5 years, the standards change and we reinvest in new technologies. And let's try to avoid that. Let's what we call future-proof our investment. We have a one-time shot here. We can invest not in today's technology, but in tomorrow's technology. And by that, I mean pretty much fiber optic communications, which are limitless. Once you put fiber in the ground, it lasts a long time, and it can be scalable to any bandwidth you want, up or down. And upload speeds are increasingly important. So right now we can build, and we have systems that will send 100 megabits down and 20 megabits up, and that's pretty good. But it's pretty good for today. We already can see where we will need much higher speeds going up as well as down. And as a matter of fact, the U.S. Treasury Department issued rules or proposed rules for the American Rescue Plan, and that's the money that we're spending, $275 million in Montana. And those Treasury rules say that we should be investing in 100 down, 100 up, what they call symmetrical service. And that's pretty much a fiber optic service. So wireless, where you absolutely positively can't do it, and where that happens, you need to be scalable to 100 by 100. Otherwise, we should be investing in fiber optics, which is the future-proof technology that we can and should be investing in today so that we won't have to go back and reinvest every 5 years as standards change.
Yeah, it's you can't have this discussion, I think, without entering into a large portion of it being how much technology will advance us in our goals. Jeff Feiss is with us, General Manager of the Montana Telecommunications Association. Another question upcoming, public funding to build them. Who will service them? We're back with more from Montana for Montana in just a bit.
No matter how far you may go, there's always one just down the road.
Tell them who.
In need of some energy to get your day going? Your local town pump's got it. C4 Energy 16-ounce, buy two, get one free. And in the deli, taco snack burritos are only $2.99. Town Pump, convenient and right down the road.
Town Pump, right down the road. Pump it up, yeah.
We are at 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. That latter one is the text message. We're going to take a quick call as Jeff Feiss is with us here with the Montana Telecommunications Association. Simply put, it's the how, the where, the when, and the why of expanded broadband infrastructure spending to make a difference in Montana. Lisa, listening in Miles City, you're on the air on Voices here with Jeff Feiss.
Hi, I'll make this real quick. The suburbs that are popping up in rural areas would be good places to go. Landlord bought a plat 20 years ago out here, and it was nice to be able to get internet. You can reach more of the populations in rural areas. I think like Casey, he had called in and talked about having divided up an area of land, and so that would reach a lot of people in a rural area, because outside the city is rural then.
All right, Lisa, I'm going to piggyback off of that and talk about, servicing the public with these towers. What kind of permitting system do you need? And then also go into the public's going to fund to build them, Jeff. Who's going to service them? I hope it's the local folks.
There's lots of things to unpack there. So one, suburbs are a great area to target. That would get you more bang for the buck. Towers are less a feature in a future-proof deployment, although there's two different things going on. You have fixed wireless where towers would apply, and then you have the fixed wired, which is fiber optics, preferably. So You know, it would be great, and there is a factor in the law that was just passed that requires providers or potential applicants for grant funds to demonstrate their financial and operational competence and the history of providing service, broadband service to their customers. We hope in the rural broadband community that that means companies that have a demonstrated commitment to serving their customers and their communities would be given a preference in the list of, you know, in scoring criteria for who should provide these broadband investments. It's not clear, and quite frankly, one of my concerns is that companies that have caused Montana to be 51st in the nation will apply for and even get grants to fund that which they should have been funding all along. That's yet to be determined. Hopefully, the scoring criteria will give a preference to community-based organizations like the rural providers who are already serving Montana.
Yeah, yeah.
That's to be seen.
That's my key hope here, too, is that there's a lot of money, and that always draws a lot of attention, and I think that we've seen in Montana that it's our co-ops and our telecoms that are community-based that have really put out the dough, as you said, because there's, you know, you're serving one household and sometimes even half a household per square mile. So that's my hope, too. Jeff, we've run out of time, but I do want to circle back with you on this, too. Is there going to be any first – and you've got like 10 seconds here. Are we going to see some money and some work on the ground soon?
Probably early next year.
Okay. All right. Well, it's very necessary in this state.
It is.
Keep
We're
up
looking forward
job.
To it. We got a long way to go, and we have a good opportunity here.
Thanks for joining us.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. Good to catch up with you. We'll be back with more tomorrow. We're going to be live from the Montana Petroleum Association meeting. This will be cool. You know how much a little bit of an energy geek. So join us for that. My thanks to Eric Young, our in-studio engineer. You guys have a great day.